Case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the sixth case, the United States v. Nayak. Mr. McQueen.
Presiding Judge Flom, your honors, may it please the court. As this court well knows, after the Supreme Court's decision in Finale in 1987, Congress had to take action to resurrect what we knew as the honest services or intangible rights theory. And it did so in 1988 with statutory section 1346. And it said the definition of scheme to defraud in 1341 and 1343 includes the intangible right to honest services. Now, the court has had cases in the public corruption area, and it has had private cases. This is a private context case, and I think we've got to focus on what Justice Scalia said in the Sorich decision about the staggeringly broad swath of behavior that falls or may fall, depending upon the discretion of a prosecutor, under Section 1346. What this court said in Bloom about the judicial gloss on the mail fraud statute that 1346 has become, and what this court also said in its decision in United States versus Thompson, that it is necessary to cabin the reach of the statute. Now,
Mr. McQueen,
yes, Your Honor.
What case in this circuit best supports your argument?
The Hossman case, Judge, I think clearly supports the argument in the sense that Judge Bauer wrote that the attorney there in his kickback scheme with the chiropractor was taking money that under his retainer agreement with his client ought to have gone to the injured client, but rather was being funneled through the chiropractor as part of the medical claims back to Attorney Hossman. And as the court said, there is, quote, a gain at the expense of the party to whom the fiduciary duty was owed. In this case, the fiduciary duty was owed by the nine immunized doctors involved here to their patients. I certainly don't dispute, Your Honors, that my client made payments in the form of cash as to five of the doctors and in the form of advertising expenses as to four of those nine immunized doctors. But the important issue here is, as my client said in his plea agreement, he did not intend any physical or monetary harm. And as the government concedes in their brief in footnote 4, as they specifically conceded in response to a question at the fourth day of the sentencing from Judge Gettleman about injury, damage, any harm to the patients, there was none. So we have here a situation that focuses upon the materiality of the intention to defraud. I am not going to contest that by making these payments, my client did not engage in a scheme to defraud. But the issue is, if there is absolutely no damage beyond the fact of a breach of fiduciary duty to the fiduciary party, in this case the patients, how can there be a violation of the intangible rights theory?
Mr. McQueen?
Yes, Judge.
If there had been tangible harm provable to the
yes.
patients, I assume there would have been no need to rely on Section 1346.
Not necessarily, Judge. The government might have been able to establish a straight 1341 claim, but I'm not certain that they could have. I think clearly the easier approach, particularly after the Supreme Court's decision in Skilling, when they see the bribes or kickbacks fact is to use the honest services claim.
Right, but if you can show that this scheme took money out of the pockets of those patients, directly, indirectly, then you're talking about tangible harm, and they've been defrauded, right?
In that case,
in the course of the scheme that that Dr. Nyack was running,
that would be accurate, Judge. I agree with Your Honor's analysis.
So, why should we hold that such tangible harm is necessary when we're talking about intangible rights under 1346?
Again, because of the lack of materiality. Your Honors earlier had a case where there was a comment about a case on all fours. And obviously my position as presented in my brief is that the Eighth Circuit's decision in United States versus Jane is on all fours, where the court focused upon the conduct of a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist referred all of his patients to a particular psychiatric hospital, and he was getting $1,000 a patient kickback. When it came to the intangible rights allegations in the conviction, the Eighth Circuit said the kickbacks here are not material. They did not affect the quality or the cost of his services to the patient.
How is that consistent with the Supreme Court's later decision in Skilling? They seem to be different solutions to the same problem.
Well, I think, Judge, the problem is that given the bribes or kickbacks, the issue is there a material intent by the defendant to engage in conduct which causes harm to the fiduciary? And if there is not harm to the fiduciary, if the facilities owned by Mr. Nyack were substandard and could have or did cause damage to the patients, that is an example, I think, Judge, of where 1346 would apply. The honest services application would find some harm in the fact that the physician made the referral after he took the bribe or the kickback. The government concedes in this case, as the facts were in the Jane case, that these facilities are state of the art, they are fine facilities, they were properly staffed. The Eighth Circuit pointed out that the particular hospital that was paying the kickbacks was probably the very best psychiatric hospital in the Kansas City area. But certainly there is not evidence that there were any improper billings, any injury to any of these patients that I think are the types of evidence of material intent to defraud that is necessary for application of Section 1346 to these facts. If I may, if Your Honors don't have any questions right now, I'd like to preserve the remainder of my time.
Surely, Mr. McQueen. Ms. Kastanek?
May it please the Court, my name is Andriana Kastanek, and I'm arguing on behalf of the United States. This case presents a very limited issue. The indictment alleges, and the defendant admits, that he paid bribes to doctors. The indictment alleges, and the defendant admits, that these bribes were not disclosed to the patients of the surgery centers, and that by structuring the bribes like this, the defendant caused the doctors to breach their fiduciary responsibilities to the patients.
Is there evidence that without the monetary incentive, the physicians would have referred the patients to another site?
That absent the bribes, they would have gone to another center. Mm-hmm. Your Honor, the indictment alleges that these bribes were material to the doctor's decision to send their patients to this surgery center, and the defendant admits as much in the plea agreement. The defendant also admits, and the indictment alleges, as I said, that these bribes were both material to the doctors as well as the patients who underwent surgeries at these surgery centers. So this case presents a very limited issue, which is whether, even though this qualifies as honest services fraud under the well-established elements set forth in Skilling, whether this additional element of pecuniary or tangible harm is necessary. To add that element is inconsistent with the court's opinion in Skilling, where the court said there are all these ways in which the courts of appeals have tried to cabin what 1346 provides, and we will adopt a standard that requires bribes or kickbacks, which is satisfied in this case, and a breach of fiduciary duty, which also is satisfied in this case. The defendant tries to distinguish between private sector and public sector honest services fraud in his argument. Skilling rejected that distinction, which was something that this court previously had provided for in Bloom, that in the private sector context where there is a conflict of interest or a self-dealing case, that there is some sort of private gain required. Skilling put it all on an even playing field. It said that instead of those other types of requirements, that it would require a breach of fiduciary duty. And that breach of fiduciary duty can arise in the public official context. It also can arise in the context of employer-employee relations. It can arise in the context of doctor-patient relationships.
What circuits have weighed in on the issue post-Skilling? And is there a circuit split on the issue?
I actually am not aware of a court of appeals weighing in on this particular issue post-Skilling. Mm-hmm. It is something that has been left undeveloped post-Skilling, Your Honor. If there are no further questions from the panel, the government would ask that this court affirm the defendant's conviction.
Thank you. Mr. McLean.
Absent a showing that the defendant intended to use the scheme to engage in conduct that defrauded the fiduciaries of something to which they were entitled, I think that this indictment is deficient. It doesn't square even with...
But how do we get past that language in Skilling? That even if the scheme occasioned a money or property gain for the betrayed party. How do we get past that?
I think we do, Judge, by focusing upon what occurred. And that is that beyond the fact that the physicians failed, and I concede as part of the scheme, not to disclose to their patients that they were taking them on this day to this facility, which Dr. Feinstein, I might add, testified was a great facility to go to because we could schedule many more surgeries than we could at a hospital. There were much greater flexibility and so forth. There were lots of advantages to these physicians coming to my client's facilities above and beyond the monetary
value. Can you be sure of that, Mr. McLean, in every instance?
In every instance, in what sense, Judge?
That the doctor, in making the reference to the clinic, had the best interests of the client involved. I understand your position that these clinics may meet very fine standards or high standards. If there's what reflection is had by the doctor upon the appropriate facility if he's been bribed to direct it to a specific facility?
I think an example, Judge, is Dr. Feinstein's testimony in the aggravation hearing. And that was, I didn't send all of my clients to Mr. Nyack's facility. I sent some to other facilities, but the ones I sent to Mr. Nyack's facilities I was doing because I was getting that bribe.
Right. So was there appropriate reflection by the doctor when it's a Nyack facility versus whatever reflection went into the choice of other facilities.
I think, Judge, the issue comes there down to whether this is an inferior facility. And if it is
that kind of inquiry, how does one arrive at that? Other than, you'd have to have a trial for that. The point is, the relationship between a doctor and a patient is such that financial concerns about where to go to have an appropriate facility ought not to be a factor. When it becomes a factor, how do we untangle that? That's all I'm saying. I understand you can untangle it in mitigation by having a witness say this is a good facility. But the fact is, the doctor never makes the reflection, does he? If he's locked in by a bribe to X clinic, and let's say it's not this clinic, let's say it's another case. You posit that these clinics are fine, but let's say it's a clinic that may not be so fine. In that case, how do we determine that is situation?
Well, I think Your Honor is right. That could only be determined with a trial,
right,
with all of the evidence presented to the court. I ask the court respectfully to reverse the denial of our motion to dismiss the indictment and information. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to all counsel. Case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.